You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.
William Endel is a leading researcher, economist, and analyst of the New World Order who's written on issues of energy, politics, and economics for over 30 years. In 2004, he's also written very important books, A Century of War, Anglo-American Oil Politics and the New World Order, An Essential History of Geopolitical and the Importance of Oil. Dr. Endel also explains that America's post-World War II dominance rests on two pillars. One is a commodity unchallengeable military power, and the dollar as the world's reserve currency combined with the quest to control global oil and other energy resources. One of his latest books, Seeds of Distractions, The Hidden Agenda of Genetic Manipulation, is the topic of our show today. It depicts the chilling story of how Washington and four Anglo-American agribusiness giants plan world domination by patenting life forms to gain world control of our food supply. Very privileged to have William Endel. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The story of genetically modified foods has been sort of a hidden story for most people in North America. At least in Canada, we do not have a description of what is contained within our foods. Why is it so important for us to understand the history of the development of GMO foods?
I've been tracking issues of agribusiness since the early 1980s and the Uruguay round of trade talks that began in the mid-80s. And when I looked into the companies behind the push for GMO seeds, patented seeds like Monsanto, DuPont, Dow Chemical, and so forth, I did a little further research and was quite intrigued to find that the same foundation, which I had looked at so closely in studying the power of big oil, the Rockefeller Foundation, Standard Oil Trust, and so forth, they were the major instigator of the entire project to create patented seeds, to create genetic manipulation of seeds to develop so-called other traits. And that itself was, for me, an alarm bell, because the Rockefeller Foundation goes into nothing unless it enhances their control and the control of the powerful elites that they're the leading representative in the Anglo-American world. And lo and behold, what I found is that the GMO project with Monsanto and these other companies was fully a part of this Rockefeller plan that Henry Kissinger talked about back in the 1970s. If you control oil, you control whole nations, he said. If you control food, you control the people. Then I dug deeper. I began talking with experts on GMO, scientists who had been involved, biologists, and others who had been involved from the beginning in some of the earliest experiments, and confirmed that GMO itself was a entirely unstable technology, that it's a complete hoax in terms of serious science. It's a fraud in terms of the claims that it gives better harvest yields or lower use of herbicides and chemicals. It's just the opposite in the experience of farmers that have used it. But it's part of an attempt to get patents on seeds around the world so that these three or four giant companies and the Pentagon and the political powers behind them will ultimately, maybe let's project down 10 or 20 years from today, will be able to dictate who gets seeds and who doesn't get seeds in this world, who eats and who starves. And that, to my mind, is a power that no private company or no group of private companies ought to be allowed to have.
You speak in your report about the Wallace Report and how this has had a huge impact in the economy of Mexico. And I wonder if I could touch on that story and then connect it to what is happening to us here in North America, how those same policies are being used to basically displace our farmers, to eradicate what used to be the foundation of our economic.
Back about a decade ago, you know, Oaxaca, Mexico is the cradle of corn seed varieties for the entire world, just as Iraq used to be the cradle of wheat varieties for the entire world. And in Oaxaca, in that part of Mexico, they discovered about a decade ago that some of the ears of corn that they were growing had very strange characteristics. And one of the farmers took it to a biologist who had a testing laboratory nearby, Ignacio Chapela, a Mexican-American who was a professor at Berkeley in California, biologist. And when Chapela tested these corn seeds, he found, lo and behold, that they were genetically manipulated, despite the fact that Mexico has national laws forbidding the planting of GMO in the land of Mexico. So this set off alarm bells all over Mexico. And Chapela was so concerned about this that he published a peer-reviewed scientific paper about the contamination of the Mexican corn seeds with GMO seeds. And it was published in one of the leading science journals in England. As soon as it was published, Monsanto and the GMO agribusiness lobby put so much pressure on the editor of the magazine that they actually, for the first time in their 100-year-long history, retracted the article. The editor, he was afraid for his job. And then the biology department at Berkeley got a $35 million grant from Monsanto Company to do biotechnology research. But the research has to be specified by Monsanto as to what they want tested and how they want it tested. So essentially, Monsanto has taken over lock, stock, and barrel the biotechnology faculty of Berkeley University, even though Chapela has tenure there. So that's an example of the mafia-like way that this agribusiness lobby around GMO operates.
We believe ourselves to be more informed, more enlightened, and we think that these policies don't apply to us, that a lot of these things are practiced somewhere else, and it's too bad that it happens, but they have corrupt governments. Our governments here work to protect us. Can you talk a little bit about the influence of the WTO in promoting and forcing governments, not only in Latin America, but in Europe, where a huge resistance was launched against genetically modified foods?
Well, first of all, the idea that the U.S. government is protecting American citizens in terms of food health is a complete misreading of the situation. In fact, since 1992, when Papa Bush was president and made a ruling, an executive ruling, no government agency is allowed to do independent tests on GMO seeds. They're supposed to accept GMO seeds for corn, for soybeans, for cotton, whatever, as substantially equivalent to conventional seeds and make no special tests. The only tests about the safety of GMO seeds that the U.S. government has are tests that are given to it by Monsanto and the companies themselves. So talk about a conflict of interest. You're not going to give a test that shows your seeds causes cows to die in birth or whatever, which are some of the effects of GMO corn. You're going to fake your test data, which has been proven. By the way, it's not just my speculation. This has been proven in cross-checks of many of the Monsanto tests that have been submitted to the government. So it's a totally rigged thing. The government has been utterly corrupted by the agribusiness lobby over the course of the years. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is the U.S. Department of Monsanto Incorporated. Tom Vilsack, the current secretary, is a longtime friend of Monsanto from his home state when he was governor. Every previous agriculture secretary has had links one way or another with Monsanto and the agribusiness GMO lobby. So it's an incestuous relation between the GMO seed companies, the U.S. government, and the Canadian government is not any better from everything I know. So even up to the Canadian Supreme Court ruling against the farmer, Percy Schmeiser, whose land was contaminated through the wind blowing Monsanto seeds from a test field next to his. And then he's supposed to pay a fine to Monsanto for stealing Monsanto seeds, something he didn't even want on his farm. So it's there is no safety in North America. There's, by law, it's forbidden to label foods if they contain GMO. So the American consumer has no idea what they're eating. They're eating a diet today that's about 67% by one estimate, 67% of GMO products. And even worse than the GMO, or as bad as the GMO, where nobody knows what the long-term effects on the health are, it takes 10 to 20 years for that to become obvious, is the effects on the health of unborn fetuses, for example, of the glyphosate that's used and the Roundup herbicide that Monsanto produces, which you must buy when you sign a license with Monsanto for Monsanto GMO seeds. You must buy Roundup chemicals to spray on those seeds, and the seeds are resistant to that chemical, but it kills everything else in sight. Scientists at the university in France, in Ken University, recently independently tested and proved that that Roundup herbicide gets into the groundwater in toxic doses that are enough to affect the an unborn fetus. So this is really dangerous stuff, and it's not at all being regulated by the North American governments. The U.S. uses, agribusiness uses the WTO as its tool. They wrote the rules, Cargill and the agribusiness companies like Monsanto, and so they wrote the rules of agriculture for the WTO when it was set up in the mid-90s. And the U.S. government uses WTO as its battering club against other nations to pressure them to accept these Monsanto seeds where they have a monopoly.
We need to ask the question, why? Why is it that these policies are implemented without asking further questions? Now, in your book, you point to the deep connections between big banks, big oil, big pharma. Can you give us an example of how this global reorganization of our food, the connection to corporate interests and the banking system, has these interconnections that prevents us from being able to get the information as consumers, but more importantly as citizens, to transform those forms of power?
Well, the Rockefeller family, I go back to them because they were the politically most important family on the face of the earth in the period after World War II. And the four brothers, they simply divided up the world among them. And they developed a thing at Harvard Business School back in the 1950s, which the people involved in it called by an artificial name. They made up a name called agribusiness. Today, that's a household word, agribusiness. But their idea was to create a cartel of control of the world food chain, exactly the way the Rockefellers created a cartel of control of the world energy industry, oil industry, from oil drilling down to the transportation through pipelines, down through the tanker fleets, the refiners, and down to the local gas station and to the Wall Street derivatives trading that controls the price of oil. So they have created this cartelization of the agribusiness. What they've done is destroyed the traditional family farmer. You know, the heart of a healthy food supply is a family farmer. I don't know of any model in human history that's done better than that. The family farmer, why? Not because I'm a romantic, but because if you have direct ownership and responsibility on that level of what you're producing and the animals that you're caring for, you're going to take care of every newborn pig, every calf, every creature that you have under your watchful eye. Now, what they did with the agribusiness is they started first with chicken farming, and they turned that into factory farms. So chickens in America and North America are not raised in the free-roaming way, which is the healthiest way you can raise chickens, in a mixed farm with a little bit of corn, a little bit of vegetables, a little bit of cattle and milk cattle and some chickens. Today it's dominated by agribusiness. Tyson Farms and three or four companies dominate the industrial production of chicken. And they take 50,000 to 100,000 chicks who don't ever see the light of day in their short lives before they're slaughtered. They're pumped up with antibiotic and contained enclosures so that the chicken feces are so mixed with antibiotics and other toxins that they go into the groundwater that there was a lawsuit between the state of Arkansas, where Tyson Foods is located, and the state of Oklahoma because it was contaminating the Oklahoma River system with toxins. This kind of thing is not, in my mind, this is not food. This is factory food, and it's not fit for human or animal consumption. But that's where we're going. It's no wonder that the population has epidemic levels of allergies in the last 10 or 15 years. That's the same period when GMO foods were introduced on a mass scale without any prior testing. And it's also the same period when this industrialization of the food production really became dominant in the beginning of the 90s up to the present time.
You make a direct connection to this practice of dollar devaluation and the impact that this has had in pushing countries to accept and conform to U.S. policies. Can you speak to this?
Well, post-war U.S. power and the elites who created the blueprint for post-war domination by the United States had a policy group financed by the Rockefeller Foundation called the War and Peace Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York. They, in their deliberations, they said, let's not make the mistake that the British made. We will take pains not to call our system an empire. We won't call it the American Empire because the American people don't like to feel they're imperial like the British. They like to feel they're freedom-loving and so forth. So we'll say that we're exporting freedom, the free enterprise system, to the rest of the world. We're exporting democracy and the American way of life. In fact, what they are exporting is a control over the planet that no other power in human history has had. The power was based on two things after the Second World War. One was the fact that America would remain the most powerful military force on the face of the earth. No one would be allowed to challenge American military power. The only ones who came close, and they were still quite far away, were the Soviet Union during the Cold War. But once the Cold War is over, Washington, Father Bush, and various people like Kissinger declared that America was the world's sole superpower, and that means we're running the show here, boys. So the power has rested on two pillars. One is that military pillar. The second pillar is the American dollar is the currency of trade for world commerce. That means if you want to buy oil in Kuwait, or if you want to buy oil in Iraq, or if you want to buy oil in Venezuela, you have to pay it in dollars. Why is that important? Because the dollar is not a currency anymore backed by gold, not since 1971. So as long as the dollar is only a piece of paper, what is it backed by? Well, as I often say in my writings, today the dollar is not backed by gold. In the 70s, when the oil price went up 400% in 6 months during the 1973 oil shock, and then again in the Iran crisis in 79, the dollar at that point, you could say, was backed by oil. Well, today it's backed by nothing more than the raw military power of F-16 fighter jets and Abrams tanks in the U.S. military. And that power is getting stretched dangerously thin around the world. Look at Afghanistan, look at the debacle in Iraq, you know, just look almost anywhere and you'll see that the American military is stretched dangerously thin. So they've used devaluation of the dollar to terrify other countries like the Europeans with the euro. In fact, they're doing that right now, doing a organized hedge fund attack through people like George Soros and others in New York who had a secret meeting early in February to talk about this. They're attacking the euro, which has the benefit of raising the dollar because the dollar is in danger of a total collapse with this financial crisis. So they use currencies, they use attacks on Asian economies like they did in the 1997-98 period to keep the dollar as the key currency in the world.
So I wonder if you could talk about the impact that we stand as a society if we allow this kinds of monopolies to continue, if we do not reorganize our society in a different way.
Well, I think that's the point, that in every country that I'm familiar with, people have allowed the banking power to become the god. Well, I just am in the process of bringing a new book out called Gods of Money, Wall Street and the Death of the American Century. But literally, they view themselves as gods, and that we're simply the ants or the bees that work for them. And they can decide to squeeze us out of existence or not. That's what's got to be turned around. That's got to be rolled back and brought under control. The crisis in the U.S., Barack Obama, when he was inaugurated as president, he came in on a promise that he was going to do fundamental change of the power structure in America. What he did instead was to appoint every key position that dealt with financial policy and banking policy. He brought in a representative of either Goldman Sachs or Citigroup and Wall Street and put them in control of every single decision that's been made so far, including his Treasury Secretary Geithner, who deregulated the whole banking system back in the 1990s when he was undersecretary. So this power has got to be reined in. It's a plutocracy of money. And this was the downfall of the Roman Empire in the 4th century, when the Romans went from a republic to an empire and allowed money to buy political office. It became a plutocracy, or people of wealth control it, or some people call it an oligarchy, where your voting power is directly proportional to the amount of money you have. And that was the decadence and collapse of Rome with the Bacchanalian orgies and everything else, but it was a moral decadence, and that is what destroys nations. That's what's destroying our nations in the last 30 years. It's very clearly so. And the center of the destruction, the center of this cancer, is Wall Street and the City of London, and that with these strong emphasis on Wall Street as the center of the dollar empire.
As citizens, where should our efforts be directed to?
I think people ought to inform themselves of what their children are eating on the breakfast table. Look at that box of Kellogg's cornflakes. Send a letter or make a call to the Home Office and ask them what percentage of cornflakes contains genetically modified corn as a raw ingredient. And they will probably give you a runaround about that. But all of the corn used in American cornflakes in the grocery stores are made, more than 70% of all American corn is genetically modified today. Monsanto is selling the seeds for most of that, Pioneer and other companies. But it's all GMO corn in the United States and I believe also in Canada. So people need to put pressure on their grocery stores. They need to organize circles of their friends. They say, look, in the back of the Seeds of Destruction book, my book, which is available in Canada or in the U.S. over Amazon, Seeds of Destruction, the Hidden Agenda of Genetic Manipulation, people can find an index of names of the key companies and begin to get people educated about the dangers there. People have to become awake to the fact that just because it's in a grocery store shelf with an attractive-looking packing, it doesn't mean it's healthy for your children. Opposite is usually the case, unfortunately.
Could you speak about the connection to the recent pandemics we've had and the threat to our health?
We didn't have a pandemic in a medical scientific sense. We had a fake scenario that was orchestrated by four or five giant pharmaceutical companies, GlaxoSmithKline, Novartis in Switzerland, Roche, which is the big marketer of Tamiflu, the company that Donald Rumsfeld has majority stockholding in, according to reports. And what they have done is to change the definition of pandemic to mean a disease or some kind of symptoms that appear in 20 or more countries, and several of the countries have to be next to each other. And once that number is reached, it does not matter how deadly the disease is. It's declared automatically a pandemic. Well, that means that emergency purchasing of drugs have to be implemented by these countries under law. They have these pandemic regulations. So the U.S. government, the German government, all these governments around the world stockpiled billions of dollars of these worthless, untested drugs for so-called swine flu, H1N1. The original outbreak occurred, if you trace that down into this village called La Gloria in Veracruz in Mexico in April of last year. Well, the original outbreak occurred right next to a factory farm of Smithfield Foods, the world's biggest industrial hog producer, where something like 1 million hogs a year are force-fed, grown, and slaughtered. And the waste from those hogs, I don't know if any of your listeners have ever been around a pig farm, but the waste from pigs is pretty impressive in volume. And that waste is mixed with the toxic antibiotics that the pigs are fed daily in order to make them grow fat faster. And that goes into cesspools. And the reason they're in La Gloria, Mexico, is because the environmental restrictions are much more relaxed in countries like Mexico or in Romania, where they also have one of these giant factory farms, than they are in Virginia, where they were fined by the Environmental Protection Agency for something like $21 million, the biggest fine they ever, EPA ever gave, for polluting the river waters of Virginia with their pig waste. So this whole H1N1 pandemic, it's a criminal enterprise, is what I call it, by the pharma industry, to number one, get billions of dollars into their bank accounts, but number two, the vaccines that people were told by dear governments to give their children and pregnant mothers and so forth, those vaccines were untested, almost all of them that I was able to get any information on from the companies. almost all of them contained adjuvants or boosters that have deadly effects in some known cases and severe paralyzing effects, Guillain-Barre syndrome and various other diseases, permanent paralysis, muscle paralysis, where people aren't able to walk anymore. After vaccination, in some cases, they die. These are horrendous things with people are being told as though it's taking a sugar-coated pill or something. So there are so many dimensions to this this criminal malfeasance of the World Health Organization and the CDC from Atlanta and the major governments of Europe and North America. Let's hope that the uproar around this, against this vaccination campaign, such that it was largely a flop. Only 6% of the population in Germany bothered to get the vaccine, and the government now doesn't know what to do. So they are considering dumping the vaccines on the unknowing populations of places like Haiti and the developing countries, where they don't know what they're getting.
And I just wonder if you could touch a little bit on the connection then of GMO foods and the production of the pharma industry.
Well, there's a whole field of genetic manipulation which is involved in trying to cultivate vaccines from crop plants that are genetically manipulated. So far, it hasn't been a huge success because genetic manipulation is so unstable, but they are people who are planning to make this into a trillion-dollar business called genetic pharmacology.
There has been resistance. European countries like France, Germany, Austria, Denmark, and even some European-approved biotech products have been rejected by the population. And I wonder if you could talk about the importance of this resistance, because I don't think it's a done deal.
It's not at all a done deal. You know, if GMO were such a good thing, why do companies like Monsanto have to bribe governments, as they did in the case of Indonesia, where the courts ruled against them? They were actually caught, their hands on the money table. And why do they have to bribe governments or force it through the USAID on helpless countries like Iraq take GMO seeds when they have no seeds at all to live on after the war? And why do they have to arm-twist governments in the European Union and use massive scare tactics and propaganda campaigns if it's such a good improvement, if it's such a benefit? No, it's not. It's a way to control. People can figure out themselves how to organize when they understand the issue at stake, when they understand that the health of their own children and their children's children is at stake in this if they don't do something to reverse this destruction of the food chain through GMO and agribusiness, then they'll find out ways to organize. And once that happens, then and in a grassroots way, don't depend on anyone to come down and tell you what to do. You can do it much better yourselves. And that's why the media is so centrally controlled. Media in North America and Western Europe, especially in the U.S., CNN and such, they're probably more tightly controlled than the media in a communist country like China.
What do you hope people would take from your book?
Well, I hope they begin to think more seriously when they go to the grocery store and buy meat or buy a box of cornflakes or various other things for their family, to ask questions about what it is in terms of the quality of the food that they're getting and how they can improve it by supporting local farmers who produce in ways that they can directly control and see more clearly before those local farmers are in a extinguished species.
Thank you so much for being with us, William. For people who would like to learn more about your book and your upcoming books, how do they get in touch with you? How do they obtain your book?
Best would be to go to my website, www.engdahl.oilgeopolitics.net. And on my website, I have a variety of articles on GMO, on the whole gods of money thing, on the various books that I've written, and several MP3 and YouTube television and radio interviews that I've made over the various subjects that we've touched on. So
thank you again for being with us.
Thank you.
Take care.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.